There's news on the Brexit front this morning breaking out of Paris. French President Hollande says there will be no trade deal with the UK before Brexit is underway. Officially, that could be about 2 years. We, of course, had the trigger of Brexit yesterday, and the official letters were changing hands. But this is one of the first signs that it may be kind of tough for the United Kingdom to get trade deals before it officially leaves the European Union. That's what we're going to talk about this morning with our thought leader, Don Lloyd, the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets at Associated Bank, in charge of foreign exchange, rate swaps, commodity derivatives. He knows all about what's happening around the globe, and he is with us this morning. Don, welcome back to the Opening Bell. Let's start with Brexit. We've seen the trigger now, and what does this mean going forward? What can we see happening? People must be very nervous.
A lot of people that haven't had a lot of sleep, I think, me being one of them. Certainly one of the more exciting things that has happened in our industry, in the foreign exchange industry, in some time. You've read about it, you've heard about it, and now it's sort of getting some traction. The wheels are in motion, and we're going to put some action to this thing now.
Is it anticlimactic? I mean, there are this is going to roll out over the course of 2 years, right? I mean, so it's going to be sort of a gradual thing. But are there impacts that we will see sooner than later?
The press and the markets will probably get way ahead of things. Like you said, this is a two-year rollout. They have up to 2 years once Article 50 goes into motion. Might be sooner, but let's just plan on the full 2 years. It's going to be a slow marathon, slow roll to get this thing out. And the markets just have to settle down and realize that. Think of everything that needs to be accomplished as the UK pulls out and leaves the European Union. You know, they have to decide trade negotiations, trade agreements, immigration policy. There are so many topics that have to be talked about and ironed out before all this comes to fruition, that there's just a lot of work to be done.
Lots of that could impact how we do business here in this country. What do you think is going to be the biggest impact of that?
I'm a big believer in markets are as simple as assessing risk for some type of return. I mean, you've sort of heard me say that, you know, over the last few times I've been in here. And the U.S., like any other country, is going to do the exact same analysis. They're going to assess risk for some type of return. There's no question that the U.K. pulling out of the European Union creates some uncertainty and some unknown variables. So that whole idea of risk elevates a little bit. The question is how far will U.S. companies go to sit there and mitigate that risk? Is it just going to be on their radar screen? Are they going to start moving people around? Are they going to start pulling assets out of the UK? You know, what is their plan? And those conversations, if they haven't started now, they're going to start pretty soon. And people are going to start to say, what exactly is our risk over in the UK? What risks are we facing, and what do we want to do about those risks?
So when we see some news like Goldman Sachs announcing they're moving hundreds of people out of London before the Brexit is even complete, what should we draw from that?
The whole movement getting traction, and now we're starting to put real action behind it. Perfect timing, perfect example of what is going to happen in every business, every financial institution that's sitting in the UK. But you have to remember, you know, London, they've been a center of commerce for thousands of years. You know, London's just not going to evaporate off the face of the map. You might reallocate some assets out of it and try to spread the peanut butter a little bit, if you will, spread your risk around. But London's not going to go away. I mean, not only has it been a center of commerce for a couple thousand years, but in today's modern markets, just the geographic location of where it's centered, you have a full morning of dealing with the Far East, you know, whether it's Singapore, Tokyo, Hong Kong. You have a full afternoon of dealing with North America. You know, you've got a full 10 hours a day of commerce and markets that you span. You don't have that in North America. You don't have that in the Far East. You have that in London. Now, the question is all that just going to be uprooted and put into a Frankfurt or some other place on the mainland? You might see some bleeding that goes on there just in case the UK diminishes in its stature, but you're not going to turn that over time. That could be a 10-year thing if it even gets traction at all.
And it's worth reminding people they're used to this. The European Union thing is a modern thing. There used to be a time. You think people will go back to those old playbooks?
They could. You know, the European Union was talked about back in the 1970s. That's when there really got a lot of traction in there and a lot of discussion around there. Really came to a head in the late 1990s and what we have now being in the European Union. Old guys like me, we sort of remember before it was around and we sort of know how things acted around there. I don't think we're going to go back to those days. The European Union just makes too much sense on a global basis, especially in the 21st century and going forward. So I don't think we're going to go back to the 1970s and before. But I think that there's going to be a lot of discussion around what are the risks, what are we facing, how do we mitigate those risks, and how do we spread that out. But London's not going to go away as a financial center by any stretch of the imagination.
I thought of you recently because I saw this map on MarketWatch. We'll put it up on our Twitter account and my Twitter account while you're listening here. But this actual map, In Progress Global Trading, this was kind of amazing to see in graphic form exactly what's happening every minute. Yeah. Arrows going all over. This is your world, isn't it?
It's our world. The movement of money, whether that's by trade or investment, I mean, it all flows through the foreign exchange markets. The speed at which money and commerce can occur, it's instantaneous, and billions of dollars can be moved, and agreements and communication. You sort of say, look how much ground we've covered in the last 50 years. Where are we going to be in the next 50 years? How much faster can it really get? But the world's getting smaller. But it all flows right through the foreign exchange markets, my world.
And it all sort of is important to sort of step back and look at from time to time, especially now with we hear in Washington's sort of, protectionist trade maybe coming out, this trade war possibly happening. This is kind of a dangerous area, isn't it, if we start messing with these arrows and lines and global flashpoints?
Depends on how far it goes.
Right.
Depends if it's going to stay in the realm of talk and discussion and theoretical discussion, as opposed to let's really start to build walls and put some actionable items around this thing. Anything that takes away from free trade, I think, is a huge negative. And the U.S. has to be very aware of that. We're the largest economy in the world. The next two behind us are the European Union and China. Everybody pretty much sort of falls off after that when it comes to size and whatnot. So we carry a big stick. And when we start talking protectionist measures, we have to be very careful of what that ripple effect is around the world. I think the U.S. is very much aware of that. I think we're just swinging back to more of an imperialistic United States, America first type mentality. And there's nothing wrong with those discussions and that awareness. But once it starts to impact other countries around the world, especially the emerging market type countries where you want standards of living to rise and humanitarian efforts to increase, I think the U.S. has to be very careful around that.
Are there any bright spots or negative maybe warning signs out there in the global markets that you look at that we need to know about?
There's always warning signs, and there's always bright spots that are out there. That's what create the market. Right now, I think the markets have sort of digested everything that has occurred since the election and before. And I think we're sort of in what I call the great pause, or that moment of consolidation, if you will. And if you think of this as a tennis match or a chess match, the U.S. has made its move. The Fed has started to move interest rates. Our political uncertainty is now much more certain than it was. Now it's sort of like add out. Okay, it's Europe, it's Asia, it's other countries outside the U.S.'s turn to do their move. And I think that's what you're seeing now is, okay, we have started to move our interest rate structure, our term structure of interest rates. Okay, you European Union, what are you going to do? Everybody else, what are you going to do? And that's what the markets are focused on. As I said, the markets are sort of like an amoeba that moves. And that amoeba has sort of stopped moving for now. It was moving in the direction of interest rate differentials in favor of the United States. That has stopped. And now it's non-U.S. countries' turn to see what they're going to do with their interest rates. You look at inflation, whether it's in the European Union or you look at the inflationary pressures in the U.K., they're all bumping around 2% or a little bit over. There can be room to start to move interest rates up. That differential between the U.S. and non-U.S. countries will begin to narrow. What does that mean for flows? What does that mean for trade, the cost of goods to export or import? What does that mean for investment returns? I think that's where we are right now, and sort of it's that great pause while we sort of see what the next move is going to be.
I saw one of those figures. I think it was the European zone inflation, 2.8% last month. Is that does that signify maybe what's coming for us in the coming year as well? Are we going to tick up that high?
Could very, very well. One, you know, 1 month does not a year make,
right.
But certainly the direction is up there. As goes the U.S., so goes the world. There's no question that that our cost of goods has been increasing. Is our velocity of money starting to increase? Quite possibly, you know, more over that over time. But the U.S. is going to lead the way, and other countries are going to follow that. And as the U.S. becomes healthier, other countries will become healthier, especially of our larger trading partners. That's going to have upward pressure on their interest rate and their term structure of interest rates.
Your Chicago market, we see a lot of really good innovation. I think always of 1871 and some of the other things that are happening locally. But you would have a better notion of this. Do people locally have really good markets to go out and look for funding, for investment in their innovation? How is that playing?
Sure. Funding's great. I mean, you know, banking has been around since the 7th century, you know, thanks to the Italians back in the 600s that started this whole idea of banking. Now that you've sort of weathered, you know, 2005 and the Great Recession that occurred there, you've got some strong strong companies that are around. Innovation now is coming out as they respond to market demands and whatnot. And I think banks are in a much better position to lend to them than they were, you know, 5-10 years ago. So I think you're going to see that. So funding is very much available. Innovations, the U.S. will always lead in innovation. We're always going to figure out better ways to do things and more efficient ways to do things. That's not going to go away anytime soon. You know me, I'm a big U.S. bull. I mean, I America first, and I love America. And I think you're really going to start to see a lot of this innovation unleashed, led by America, that is going to propel us for the next 25, 50 years.
Yeah, the jumping point for that question was seeing Glenn Tallman's Livongo raise $52 million. This is his effort to fight diabetes. It's not just a U.S. problem. It's a global problem.
It is. But again, just like anything, once there's discussion around it and once we have, you know, drawn boundaries around what the problem is, you know, and then unleash that free trade and unleash that capitalistic attitude to sit there and say, let's solve these problems. There's very little that can stand in the way of any country that's out there that employs those.
And on the most important question is how your bracket's doing.
Well, once Duke dropped out, it was all over. Wisconsin's still in it, so thumbs up. And then I've got my my dark horses that I sort of keep in the closet that I don't talk too much about. So a couple of my games are still in there.
Better luck on the global markets, I guess,
you.
Right? Don, good to see you. See you again next time.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Don Lloyd is the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets, overseeing foreign exchange, rate swaps, commodity derivatives at Associated Bank, and our thought leader conversation today. Remember, you can also listen to our past conversations at WGNRadio.com on the Opening Bell page, and you can follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. Our thought leaders are also ready to answer your questions. Send them along via email at thoughtleader@wgnradio.com. That's thoughtleader@wgnradio.com. We can answer your questions here on the Opening Bell.